We sign it before the chat tells us the time.
Right, welcome everybody to this meeting of the Scrutiny Commission for Charnwood Borough Council. There are a number of things I would like to remind people of before the start of the items on the agenda. Please note that this meeting is being recorded and the recording will be made available on the Council's website following this meeting. Under the Openness of Local Government Bodies regulation, people may film or record this meeting and this is outside the Council's control. However, people wishing to film or record the meeting should do so in a way that does not disrupt the business of the meeting. Also, so that the meeting is not disturbed, could I ask everyone present to please turn off your mobile phones or switch them to silence to ensure that your environment is distraction free. Apologies, please.
No apologies for the meeting, Chair.
Thank you very much. Item 2, minutes from previous meeting. Are all the councillors here content that the minutes are correct? Thank you very much. Thank you. Item 3, disclosures of pecuniary interest other than registrable and non-registrable interests. For information, disclosable pecuniary interests and registrable interests. You've got me to say that twice. I can't believe that. Relate to entries that are included or should be included on the Council's Register of Interests. Non-registrable interests relate to any other members. Have you got anything to declare after that? No, thank you very much. Declarations of party whip, there has been none. Item 5, questions under scrutiny, committee procedures 11-16. To my knowledge, there's none been submitted. Item 6, selective licensing scheme update. This item has been deferred to the meeting of the Scrutiny Commission to be held in October. We will discuss this further during consideration of item 14, the Scrutiny Commission work programme. Item 7 is the draft annual scrutiny report 22-23, page 14. Would you like to introduce the report, please?
Thank you, Chair. So the attached to the in the agenda is the draft annual scrutiny report for 22-23, and the intention is that this will go on to full council on the 4th of September for approval. Are there any changes or comments or suggestions before it gets referred on to council for approval?
I think it looks very professional, Chair.
Yes,
excellent.
We can't take all the credit for that in Democratic Services. It's because we've now got help from the communications team. They've put it together. We've obviously done the content as a team, the Democratic Services team, coordinated with the chairs, and then they've made it more corporate looking to how it used to. I think it looks nice.
Yeah, it looks good.
Very professional. Yeah.
All follows the same format as well. That's always good. Right, so that's we're on to item 8, which is update on void properties. The agenda supplement, if I can draw your attention to that, please. The agenda supplement that you were sent. So, Peter, could I ask you to introduce this, please? Thank you. And Colin, are you here to speak on this as well or not? Sorry, I'm not quite sure what you're...
I'll introduce item 10A.
Item 10A.
This one, I think, we can just leave with Peter as a part of the report.
That's lovely. Thank you very much, kind of. Sorry, Councillor Hamilton.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
So you may recall, members of the committee that were here at the time may also recall there was an update on voids presented to the committee back in December 2022, so back in the last calendar year. And I was asked to come back and provide an update at a later meeting, so this is that update. Moving on to page 6. What I'm going to do is kind of broadly, I'm going to talk you through the various appendix items. Okay.
Please do.
Okay, so the total number of voids over time split by category can be found at appendix 1. So that's on page 8 of the supplement document. So just to show you what you're looking at, you've got this report just here, the stacked bar chart. So the number of voids is on the left-hand side. The weeks are along the bottom. And so the point in mid-July is that far right-hand side bar. So that kind of takes us to the current position. And the colours show the category of void. So you can see in black, right at the very bottom, there's a small amount of voids that are sheltered accommodation in routine repair. There's somewhat more, which is the kind of pinky colour, sheltered ready to let. Sheltered accommodation in major works is in the kind of teal type colour, the greeny colour. Navy blue is major works, general needs. Routine repairs in the orange, and ready to let in the grey. Moving back to the main agenda, report on page 6. A review of the housing needs service has been completed. We've increased the number of allocations officers from 0.6 officers through to 4 officers. And that's kind of what's arrested the rise in the number of voids that you can see on that chart that you looked at. And you can see that it levelled out. And then you can see that performance started to improve because more properties were being let. That positive trend was interrupted about week 6 of this financial year because we had some turnover in the management structure. But we've now got some resources, interim resources back in place, and you can see that it's stabilised again. Moving on to age-restricted properties and shelter accommodation. So Appendix 3, snapshots of void property position at week 16, it's on page 10, general needs. Shows there are 69 general needs properties with a status of ready to let. Quite a lot of those, over 30, are accessible by people that are aged over 45, and 5 only to people that are aged over 60. These age-restricted properties are harder to let. So we've done some analysis, it's kind of some preliminary work with a view to looking at declassifying these properties. And what that shows is that there are about 20% of the council stock, which is over 1,000 homes, so we've got about 5,450 at the moment, so quite a significant proportion is restricted to people aged over 45 and over. About half of the, 45% of our waiting list, so the people waiting for housing, are aged under 45, so they can't access those properties. And so it's likely that declassification of these properties, so removing the age restriction, would open up a greater pool of people bidding for these properties, and would therefore, it's likely that we'd be able to let them faster. It's not to say that declassification isn't without risk, of course, because potential clash in lifestyles, antisocial behaviour issues. It's not to say that antisocial behaviour is necessarily limited to those under the age of 45, it's worth saying, but these risks do happen. So we're currently considering what we might do, in addition to bringing forward a proposal to declassify, but also bring forward some mitigation at the same time as well, which will be the subject of a future report, I expect. Moving on to Appendix 4. It's a snapshot of void properties position at week 16, so it kind of shows the position at mid-July, sheltered accommodation. And that shows that there are 67 properties in sheltered accommodation that are ready to let, and 47 of those require major works. Of course, the position is, as we've likely covered before, is that many of these properties are unlikely to ever be let. The recent decommissioning of St Michael's Court pending redevelopment actually led to a technical reduction in the number of overall voids, so we took those voids out of the reporting, and it's likely the same thing would happen again if we decided to decommission a scheme and take the voids, but they are technically empty properties. Moving on to void repairs, because we've covered to a degree the allocations kind of side of the void picture, but moving on to the repair of properties. We have increased the size of the in-house voids teams. We've got an in-house team of operatives undertaking works in properties to turn those round. But recruitment's been quite challenging. We have got some interims in place, but it's been quite difficult to fill the permanent position.
Sorry, could you just expand on that?
Yeah.
You've got a team for...
Yeah, undertaking work in standard voids.
Right, so undertaking what sort of work in standard voids, sorry?
Relet works, so that will be...
Relet works as in housing repairs?
Yes, housing repairs.
Right,
yeah,
okay, physical
works. Yeah, physical repairs, repairing floorboards.
And that's in-house?
That's in-house.
Have they always been in-house?
Yes.
So it's not anything new that you've built up. No, it's always been in.
It's always been the position. And I would, you know, I'd say as well that that's only as good as your last match, aren't you? Pre-pandemic, you know, we were turning these voids around 500 a year in 14 days. You know, weekend performance was really strong, and of course that strong performance has been interrupted. And what we really need to do is arrest that, do something different, how to get some additional resource in place to support the work of the in-house team, because we're actually at a point where I don't believe that without an additional injection of capacity, I don't believe that we'll catch up, and I don't believe we'll clear the backlog that we've got. And that's kind of the subject that summarises what I've written just here. That's also the subject of the
I ask a question as well, just on that point? Exactly how many team members do we have in the voids team, Pete?
Yeah, I can bring it back. Yeah, I'd need to come back to you exactly terms of the overall numbers.
Thank you.
But I might be able to do it by the end of the meeting, but how we go. Okay. And I have got the details. In terms of monitoring and identification and delivery of improvements, of course, there are lots of teams involved in the management of voids, and there's lots of kind of components around that. So gas test, electrical test, identifying the repairs, the tenant terminating the tenancy in the first instance, and following that, you know, all the way through to the end. So we've just finished with the support of colleagues in the business support and transformation team, a really big mapping exercise, looking at the process as a whole. And then just last week we had two days worth of workshops to look to shrink that process right down. So I do believe that will make a difference.
I was just going to say that you know, it's a huge apple, isn't it, to bite on. And I, with anything as big as that, you've got people stepping on other people's toes and cross work being done there. So yeah. I'm glad to see. So you did a workshop on that?
Yeah, so we mapped our colleagues actually from our business support and transformation team mapped the entire process, and then we had 2 days last week with representatives from all of the various service areas to look to shorten the process, that right down to the key steps. It's one of those things that it's not been looked at in certainly many years, I would venture. Of course, you know, processes evolve, not necessarily, potentially for the right reasons. But we just need to bring it back to what we can do in order to shrink the process. So I think there's some, you know, there's other things that we've done that I've not necessarily detailed here in terms of the minutiae, but I think in terms of achieving kind of a transformational change, you know, we've done quite a bit of work on the allocation side, increased the capacity there. We need to increase the capacity on the repairs side as well in order to get that transformation. And of course, then we've got the process that's kind of underpinning all of that as well. So they've been the main areas of focus.
Okay, thank you. Excuse
me. Sorry. you know, looking at the graphic bit on page 12,
Have you got there yet?
The report is broadly.
Have you nearly finished now?
My presentation is broadly concluded. I think the only thing we covered a little bit of ground. We covered a little bit of ground that kind of, you know, towards the end of that that kind of picks up on some of the main themes. Of course, we have been negatively impacted as well by Jay Tomlinson going into administration, and Jay Tomlinson was contracted to do our major voids. Mm-hmm. So of course that work is not being done, and because properties were left half finished or in various states, so I had to take the voids team and move them on to that work, which of course will negatively impact for the voids position. It further compromises it because they're doing other things, but of course we needed to do that to respond quickly to the benefit of customers and maintain the service. So yeah, that's the only thing I had.
Okay. I must admit, sorry Councillor Lenny, I was shocked because I was on the HM, and sat next to them when they came in, and they seemed so genuine and so concerned and so up for it. So I was shocked to read it, I've got to be honest. And I dare say you were as well.
It wasn't the best, although you'd
have had warnings previous. Nothing at all.
Nothing.
One day they were all right, one day not.
Correct.
Terrible. I have a knee like that. So, Councillor Lenny.
Yes, on Appendix 5, page 12, there's a grey line there saying ready to let, is that general needs?
Yes.
Yeah, and there don't seem to be any correlation with any of the works lines where it seemed to go up suddenly.
Okay, I can explain that. So that escalator, you can see there's kind of around week, you can see it was building from around week 13 of this financial year.
Sorry, are we on appendix 2?
Appendix 5, I think, is that correct?
Page 12, yeah. Thank
Voids you. By category, page 12. It's kind of a grey. It's a grey line. Ready to let general needs, and you can see that line kind of escalated over the course of earlier on last financial year, and it gets bigger and it got bigger and bigger. And what was happening is that I mentioned that we had a very limited allocations resource. So in the establishment, it was 0.6 officers.
So that was the cause then?
That was it. There was only just over half an officer in post dealing with allocations. And so the reason then it dropped, you can see it peaked.
Yes.
And then we got another 3.5-ish allocations officers in and started letting, training those officers and letting properties. And that's why you see a decline in the number of ready to let.
It just looked a bit volatile, and I just thought,
it's come down and stabilised, and it's reflected in the overall trend. Yeah. When you go back to that kind of voids, the stacked bar chart, right? I mean, the appendix 2 shows the overall trend really clearly.
Yeah.
But the stacked bar chart, what that shows is you can see the grey ones on the top are the voids ready to let, and you can see that they're kind of reducing as we're letting properties. But of course, we've got this problem in the blue and the orange, which is the stuff in repair, whereby the standard repair volumes are kind of static, not really going anywhere. And actually, the blue ones are properties in major works, and actually, that's getting bigger. But of course, Jay Tomlinson failed to kind of mobilised and got on top of that. Hence, which is why that's got bigger. The teal line, you can see that got smaller in week 52. Can you see there's a drop there?
Yeah.
And that's because we took St Michael's Court out of the numbers. So I mentioned there was kind of a technical reduction in the void. So that's what you're seeing just there. 1 week or more sheltered major works to the next week. So that kind of tells the story and the narrative as to where we are. But like I said, I think anything that's going to move us further forward is a significant injection in capacity, I think.
Well, obviously, that was I've got to declare an interest when I say about St Michael's Court, and that was one of my concerns, that was that exercise being done to get rid of voids.
To a degree.
I don't really want to see that replicated throughout the borough, but there you go. Councillor Rattray, can I just say before you come on, this stacked bar chart, I find it of no help whatsoever, the way that the data is presented here. It was to me, who was a maths teacher and dealt with data, I found it very confusing and not easy to see the position, because there was no, well, I just found it not helpful for us whatsoever. Sorry, Councillor Rattray.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to take it back to the recommendations. We've gone through a lot of detail on the breakdown of the voids, and I think there's a lot of info in the report that's really helpful on that. The recommendation is stating a certain value that we add into the budget.
That's the next item, is it?
It's 10%.
Ah, right, okay. I'll leave that there then.
I've just got one more question. It's to do with the age restriction properties, and I can see the benefits there of obviously making them available. You used the phrase, was it lifestyle clashes?
Yeah.
So I've sort of been contacted by residents where there has been some, age restricted properties let to younger people, and there has been a few issues. So I was just wondering, when you were saying about you were thinking about mitigations for that, could you give us any examples of what they might be and if they've worked in practice so far?
Yeah, certainly. Possible mitigation might be increase in the amount of resource to deal with ASB and tenancy management and tenancy support. A staged implementation as well, so rather than declassifying thousand and one go. We did it in several phases. So there's a couple of potential options, and I think they're probably fairly simple, or relatively simple options as well. And you can kind of, I think the more you look at the kind of the distribution of the stock and where it is, and kind of start to get kind of granular about it, I think it starts to become more more complex. So I would venture that they're probably the two most significant pieces of mitigation that we could have.
And so residents that currently live in these sort of types of properties, yeah, or you know, sometimes they're blocks of flats and things, aren't they? They will be consulted.
Yeah. Yes. I bet. Yes. But on the implementation rather than the decision.
Right. Thank you.
Yeah, it won't be popular, I believe.
Yeah,
it won't be.
I don't believe it would be popular with those people living in the accommodation.
No, it certainly won't. And sorry, before you two, because it's on that subject, I'm so glad you asked that. And I know it shouldn't, the idea of the scrutiny, we shouldn't hone in on our own area, but that's where we've got the expertise from. And without mentioning the flats, you know only too well there are. And they were declassified from over 60s to anyone. No classification there whatsoever, although it seems as though there is a classification, but not the right one. And we've got people living in there that are over 60. And I would like one of your mitigations to be given to those people that are over that age limit, to be given the option to move. Because you're saying that you have got hard to let shelter for the over 65s. I would like to see at least four of the residents of the flats that I'm talking about being given the option, if it was coming up now, to be able to move so that there won't be any lifestyle clashes there. Could that be one of the mitigations that you look into, please? Yeah. Because that takes up quite a lot of my time as a councillor. So I know it's bad when residents do get in touch with me repeatedly about the same thing. It's got to be bad, because residents don't moan for the sake of it. And so, you know, there was alarm bells that have come up there. So I'd like that to be looked into. I would also like to, my disappointment as well, because I can specifically remember when the 12th of December we had the presentation, that I asked for this table to come back. That was absolutely brilliant, I think. It just showed us at a glance what the house was, whether it was a bungalow, flat, house, sheltered accommodation. And I wanted that to come back in that format, but marked off what had been altered and what had been taken off the voids. So I am disappointed that this isn't here, Peter, because obviously you'd got all the work and it had been done. So I wondered if it comes back. Well, yes,
I'd like to circulate it, Chair. That would be fine.
Yeah. And at the same time, because, you can have a look on the past one anyway, for comparison, because as I say, that bar chart to me tells me absolutely nothing. And in fact, a lot of them don't tell me anything. They look good, and but they don't necessarily tell me as a councillor what is happening. So Councillor Gant, please. Did I say the name right? Yeah, great.
No problem. I just wanted to ask about the 47 properties that require major works and therefore are unlikely to be re-let. So what do you anticipate happening to those? Will they be then up for a developer to take on? Okay. So that obviously reduces our housing stock.
I can explain, to provide a bit of context through you, Chair.
Yes, please.
Certainly. Okay. So there are around 13 blocks of sheltered accommodation, and some of the blocks of sheltered accommodation, many of the blocks of sheltered accommodation, should I say, partially occupied. Mm-hmm. And the reason they're partially occupied is that they were built late 60s, early 70s. Some of the bedsits are very, very small. Mm-hmm. They don't have their own bathing facilities. So the bathroom is a shared bathroom, mm-hmm. often somewhat down the corridor. The kitchens are very, very small, mm-hmm. you know, very small. You struggle to walk two steps in them, I would venture, in order to, you know, turn around. And as a consequence of that, they're not as desirable. So whilst we have got properties that are ready to let in sheltered accommodation, we've not necessarily progressed with works in some of the ones that require, you know, further major works, because at present we can't actually let the properties okay. that are in reasonable condition.
Okay, I see. Okay, thank you.
Councillor Day.
Thank you, Chair. I think, obviously, shelter accommodation and housing was in my portfolio, and some of the sheltered accommodations, the kitchens are so primitive. All they actually have is like a hot plate. The ones I've seen anyway, the old sheltered accommodation, just have a hot plate, just with like two rings on. So they're just like, you know, just so primitive. It's unbelievable, obviously, but it's such a huge task and financial contribution to actually update all these. So, you know, there has been a task force looking at that. But I just wanted to be reassured then, Pete. So are you up to staffing levels now to be able to get on top of the voice with the in-house void teams?
No, I believe that we need additional capacity through an external contractor to supplement the work of the team. Yeah. It supports it, not to replace the work of the team, to supplement the work of the team. So at the moment there's a team leader, a painter, clearance cleaner and labourer times one. We've got six joiners in post. I mentioned that we've recently we've got six joiners in the establishment. That was increased from three. And then we struggled to recruit. We've got two bricklayers. We used to have one. We've recently increased the establishment by a further one. And a plasterer. I did meet with colleagues the other week. We think we need to increase the size of the team actually a little further than that, actually. And whilst I say, although we've only got, the team isn't full at the moment, so we've been out several times trying to recruit, so we have got more people on board, but they're for interim, so we've got people in through agency to support the work of the team. But certainly the intention is actually to increase the permanent, the permanent voids team. It's quite a competitive market at the moment, so potentially people go work on a building site or on a development site for significantly more than we can offer on a salary basis. There are clearly advantages working in local government, and we do push those, but it's still a challenging environment.
Is this not something we can have, and I've forgot the name again, people that work from school and apprenticeships.
Yeah.
That we can look in. If it's in-house, we can go for an apprenticeship.
Yeah, we can look at apprenticeships.
That are already in college, but they want somewhere to sort of hang their hat on. Because what I do see on Facebook quite a few times, and it's usually probably a mother or a father saying, my son, could be daughter, is at college, but would like some experience, and that would also kill two birds with one stone. It would be our social responsibility to employ apprentice and probably fill that void in as well, because I know a plasterer is very well skilled, but an apprentice would be mixing the plaster whilst he was putting the plaster on, and same with the brick here as well. Sorry,
can I ask you a question, please?
Yes.
Thank you, Chair. And I know not member related specific to scrutiny, but often as a member, when we do our estate walkabouts, often we come across, particularly in Mount Sorrel, because it's quite big and we've got a lot older properties from a social housing perspective, and we come across empty houses. And obviously someone's in a situation that isn't ideal for them, the property needs repair, and there's around the corner there's a little bungalow which would be really well suited, just could be across all of our wards, be suited to that particular tenant. But there just seems to be a real time lag into a really nice little property sitting there that needs a little bit of maintenance. I appreciate the staffing issue, but as a member, I've seen over a period of time it takes so long just to get the paperwork, just to get movement. It could be a month and like 9 months a year. That happened quite recently last year on our estate ward walk, and it just takes so long to actually do something about it. And this thing, then, it's obviously now lagging with the amount of properties that we have, and obviously the situation with the contractors. But it just seems to be, we don't seem to get on top of it. Even, you know, myself as a lead member, we never seem to be ahead of the game. We're just getting further and further and further behind, and isn't really helping, is it, with the contractor situation?
I wondered if that had been identified on the workshop, the paperwork, the process.
We've got, in terms of the application process for rehousing, we've got another corporate project to look at that aspect of things. The voids process was the priority, but then we've got allocations and housing needs. That work's already been mapped out. We've not done the 2B session yet, but certainly there's an intention to speed up that process as well.
Yeah, I mean, it would be nice to see, you know, we've got a lot of respect for the team, but it would be really nice to see action. And it's just frustrating when there's little property sitting there, which, you know, we need some TLC, and nothing happens for months and months and months and months. And from a ward member perspective, it's very frustrating when that could be filled and we could get revenue from that.
I had a complaint quite recently from a resident who'd had a house opposite them empty for well over a year. It finally, there is someone in it now, thankfully, and she stopped me in the street to tell me someone had moved in, but it was empty for a long time, and it is a concern to residents when they've got empty properties around them.
It doesn't reflect very well on us as a council. And I have a last question, which I don't think that's related really, it's financial, related to Tomlinson's, or whether you'd like me to wait until we go on to procurement of a new contractor. It might be more appropriate for that.
Yep, whichever you feel comfortable.
I'll wait, ma'am. Thank you.
Well, that, to be honest, went easier than I did think it would go. And I'm obviously reminding you again of the table. We like tables, and distribute it to everybody. If you want to pass that round and show
them, I've got a copy here as well.
You've got
to
copy that. Yes, because
they're both the same.
Way.
Yeah. So they're the papers.
And so thank you very much, Sally.
I was just going to say, Chair, do you want to ask the Commission if there are any further
actions? Yeah. Right, well, we've talked about and read about the actions that have been taken. Have you got any other actions that you would like to see? I, for one, would like to know the outcomes of the workshop. I'd like that to come back at some point, just to show the changes that have been made and changes implemented and how well they've worked. And what improvement you've seen from that.
I don't know how viable it is, but I think it'd be really helpful to get almost like a monthly
snapshot.
Yeah, like how many voids have come back into use in the last month on a monthly basis, even if it's just distributed on email, some way to keep people updated as to the more properties coming back into use, I think would be helpful.
When you say people updated,
I mean councillors.
All the councillors?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or just this committee?
Or just this
committee? Well, I don't mind either way. I think for us it would certainly be helpful.
Is that doable?
Yeah, I receive we have a weekly report, a monthly report, so circulate the monthly one, which in summary looks like there's a bit more to it. It's Appendix 2. Appendix 3 and Appendix 4, which shows the overall trend in terms of the number of voids, rate of change, and then voids by type. But what I can also do is can add into that number of voids, number let, I think, which was your particular specific request, so we can include that too.
And that's to all councillors.
Can I just ask for you, Chair, whether it would be possible to include the Finance and Scrutiny Committee councillors
member
in that
yes because it came from you. Thank you very much.
Can I just ask one?
Yes,
the consultation for the residents about how the declassification will work, I'm guessing that won't be a full public consultation, it will just go to tenants. So will we be able to see the outcomes and the results from that?
Yes, I think the intention probably will be that we take a report to the Housing Management Advisory Board in September, setting out the the approach to declassification, an implementation timetable, and a consultation mechanism as well. So the means by which we'll kind of a timetable for consultation, and then likely to, you know, subsequently to cabinet to request for a cabinet decision.
So. Okay, so we could see it before it goes to cabinet.
I think,
or would you like it brought back here?
I presume you would have the opportunity for the pre-decision scrutiny in any event, Chair. But I've not fully considered it yet.
All the mitigations, I know.
And the entire process in detail. So without making a statement in that respect, I think what we would probably do is say this is the intended approach.
Yeah.
We will go out and consult on that approach. And then we will incorporate feedback. But I think we'd probably request delegated authority to proceed, you know, based on the consultation, because then the risk, pre-consultation, because the risk is if I go out, it will delay it if I come back after consultation. If you see what I mean? I think so. But we'll be asking for a decision and then consulting on that decision.
Okay, thank you. Sally?
Councillor Charles would like to ask a question. It's at your discretion, Chair, whether
you're allowed. Yes, Councillor Charles.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the opportunity. As you know, myself and Councillor Taylor have been quite heavily chasing you from these, you've always been. One thing, listening to what you're saying, it's like trying to turn around an oil tanker, isn't it? Because we just seem to keep ploughing on. You get some people in houses, people drop out, but we don't seem to be still addressing the situation for various reasons, which a lot of them are understandable. One thing I was wondering is whether to actually create this turning point, this change, could we not free up some money possibly from the capital budget to allow you to go out and acquire additional members of staff to get on with this work? Now, money has to come from somewhere, but as I understand it, the capital plan has been slipping and slipping and slipping for years and years, and there's millions of unspent money in that plan. Would that be a possibility? Could you then, even if we have to, say, pay slightly over the odds to get the people that we need to get them in situ to get this work done? Because I hear what you're saying and I understand the issues you've got here, but unless we actually do something that's going to make a difference, I don't really see how we're ever going to change this situation. That's probably one for Colin. the money's sitting there, the money's not being spent, this might make a change. And, you know, I think we're all sitting here saying, when's it going to happen? And then, you know, we keep browbeating you, when's it going to happen? But unless we actually do something to make it possible, it isn't going to happen, is it?
Yes, we have. In other words, the capital budget for voids is 208,000. So I can't remember what the exact figure was, but about a couple of months or so ago, we put three additional joiners and the additional plasterer in the establishment, doing exactly that, taking the capital money. But of course, the team of the recruitment is the challenge. There is a mechanism within the HR processes to increase salaries, so you can apply a market premium, and officers need to go through the correct process in that respect. So when we've been out a couple of times to add there, we can then look to add the market premium on top.
Golden handshakes.
I do believe that we need to focus on those. I think the recruitment process sometimes takes some time in order to conclude. And so what's happened is there's been failed processes. And then, kind of in parallel to that, managers have brought in staff faster through agency in order to get those on board. But we do need to go back out again for those permanent positions as well. So the answer is yes.
But do you actually know? You know, if we were sitting here saying, "What do you need? Yeah. What do you need?
Yes.
You know, what do we need to get to turn this around and get some?"
I believe that, the subject of the late report.
So, yes. In other words, have you got the money to do what you want to do?
I believe broad...
The availability of it already.
Broadly so, I think. There's the capital voids budget, so obviously we're looking at options in respect of the position around Jane Tomlinson. That's it too much. But there is a capital budget attributed to that project to spend on external to spend on external contractors and work, so that's there. I'm asking for additional revenue budget for standard voids, and that's the subject of the other report, and so that would be an overall increase in the overall HRA budget. We'll come to that item shortly. And we have used some of the capital money, your suggestion already, to increase the size of the voids team. I think we probably need to do so a little bit further, actually. But what we need to do is try and get those posts filled on a permanent basis that we have got, and just having some of recruitment. So we're looking internally, but we're also looking to external contractors as well to supplement the team.
Okay, so but again, you said like taking on agency staff as well. I mean, is there an outlet, you know, for a short term fix? Yeah. Is there a potential there to get more people on board?
The other thing that we also need to do is, because when you've got more resources, you need more management capacity to manage it as well.
I've got four extra staff now.
And that, but yeah, well, you know, potentially more. And so that's also covered in the cabinet report. And the separately to that, our repairs and investment manager is undertaking some further tweaks to the structure in order to increase the size of the management team around the around Voight as well. So
if you did have a magic wand,
yeah,
there's nothing else you would like to do?
I don't believe so, Chair. It kind of feels like, you know, there's, as you can tell, there's a number of kind of irons in the fire and things going on, and actually, you know, to we have to, I and my colleagues have to be able to control that as well.
Yes.
And so the caring care is a focus, are, you know, closing the gap in respect of Joe Tomlinson being the administration.
Which is time now.
An additional additional voids contractor, which is subject of this report, and then some focus on the capacity of the internal team as well. So there's kind of those, the three main elements, kind of things that are in the air around voids.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Lobdell.
Thank you, Chair. Just adding to that, so like you have your wish list potentially here. So because of government process, because of our government processes, will it take you longer to get someone to outsource a group of people, a group of skilled workers to do the work that we need to? Would you have to go through a further due process to be able to do that? Could we make the process quicker for you? Or because we're ready to go, but we have to go through due process. It could be 3 more, 4 months, 5 months, 6 months, couldn't it? Is there anything that we could do, a scrutiny, a recommendation, to help the process easier and quicker for you?
In respect of alternative arrangements around Jay Thomas, without saying a huge amount in an open session, you know, there are contract options through frameworks to progress a direct award, and so and also with the voice contracts. I mean, actually, if I just update you on the cabinet report that's coming, just give you a little bit of insight into that one.
We are rolling into the next item,
but if I can cover it there, okay, would that be helpful if I set out an example procurement process? So we don't have to go out and do a full European, a full tender process. We can go to a framework and do something relatively quickly. Of course, the challenge is contractors' capacity to mobilise as well, because contractors aren't sitting there with a massive workforce ready to meet our requirements. So there is still that mobilisation period built in as well. So procurement is one thing.
Maybe we could do things a little bit differently with what Councillor Charles has mentioned. If, you know, like the new houses are being built but aren't being sold, there's private contractors out there that are probably sitting on their hands. I know it's very difficult personally, isn't it, to get builders and bits and bobs like that, but there might be teams of people who work for a housing company who houses aren't selling. We had Councillor Charles mentioned it earlier, which is a really good idea, taking like those people's, you know, the housing company's workforce to borrow them for a short period of time to go on top of our situation.
A lot of contractors ring me in the past 3 weeks. It's not been been so busy. I think it's one of the things.
Well, thank you for that. But my last question will be on the finance, and that's where you can, if you could do. There's a lot of voids that we're not going to be able to ever rent out. It's not going to be cost effective. So if we sell those on the open market as council houses, how much of that money comes back into your, I was going to say back pocket, but I don't mean that, into your department, and how much has to go to central government?
Yeah, properties sold through the right to buy, significant.
No, not through the right to buy.
I was just going to explain the difference.
Sorry, yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to explain the difference, yeah.
Yeah,
the proportion goes back to central government, and then you can only fund, if you then go out and buy something else with that money, you can only use, I think it's 40%, I'd need to double check, of the receipt that you gained, and then you have to find the money for elsewhere. But if you sell a property on the open market, for example, one that needs major structural works, a lot of investment, you can retain that receipt, I understand, in full, and then you can also spend it in full, I understand, on new stock.
It wouldn't be put into somebody else's purse, it could stay in yours.
I don't believe so, and I have undertaken a couple of checks quite in the past few months.
I think that was my question in December, wasn't it? Well, that's good in a way, keep it there. Councillor Lenny.
Is there a policy whereby we can guarantee that any property that is sold, that is rental property to us at the moment, that money will be used to replace a property?
Or just spent on the maintenance?
I think you have to use it in that manner, is my understanding through you, Chair.
Okay.
And that would certainly be my intention.
Good to clarify that.
Yeah.
Thank you. Right. So as far as it goes, I've got to ask the committee if you, identify the actions that are made and any suggestions, which we've made a few on the mitigations, etc., haven't we, on the risk factors, the apprentices, and... was something else that I'm sure Sally got it down.
The monthly update.
The monthly update.
The commission
and the
forms.
Table
yeah.
To be sent round to the councillors as well.
And the outcome of the workshop as well.
Yes, yeah. Please. And would we like this to come back to committee?
Yes.
In 6 months? Yeah. Thank you. Right, thank you very much. And the next one is item 9, pre-decision scrutiny of any specific financial matters to be considered by the Cabinet. There is none. Item 10, Cabinet items for pre-decision scrutiny. The following items have been identified for pre-decision scrutiny from the Cabinet agenda of the 10th of August. Item 10A, procurement of voids repair contractors. Councillor Hamilton.
We've already kind of touched on this, so I almost feel nothing to say.
We've only liked it.
However, since I'm here, I want to say something. It's evident that, you know, that there's been, shall we say, a number of headwinds against us for a while, which is why voids have built up. And it's also kind of evident that... under the current way things are right now, we're not made clear the current backlog of voids. So additional stuff needs to be done. So we need additional resource and monies. And so what this is proposing is saying, look, we're going to increase the housing revenue account annual budget by, it says here, 858k, and that is to split into about 700,000 is for kind of the additional works, the contract additional works, and then the remainder is to cover the resource to manage that. And you know, the drivers of this report, first of all, it's the right thing to do. You know, if you can find properties, you want to reduce them. There's actually other things like there's kind of a compliance issue, because there's a regulator for social housing which sets standards. Of you have to have these processes to deal with that, and so this is also us meeting our compliance requirements to have processes in place to actually deal with our voids. And we have, of course, our own corporate business plan with our KPIs, and we have to perform against that. What do we need to do to hit our KPIs? But ultimately, it's just the right thing to do. Now, the thing is, where's this money coming from? There is, of course, the Housing Revenue Account Finance Fund, which I think is currently at 16.7 million. Mm-hmm. So it's taking money from this fund. But of course, the thing is that once the voids are rented out, the money comes back. So there's a payback period for that. So it is technically self-financing. So this is, I think that's the kind of key thing to think about. So it's adjusting the budget, which is why I'll have to go to cabinet, because I think anything that goes over 500k triggers, it needs to be reviewed. So that's why we're doing it, and it's clearly one of the measures that's been talked about at length to try and get us on track to reduce the voids and actually use the assets we have. Because of course there's a need for housing, and there's empty houses, and we need to get them rented out. So that's why this item is here in front of you this evening.
Okay, it's a spend to save, isn't it? So, Peter, has anything you want to say extra on that?
Nothing to add, thank you. I'm happy to respond to the procurement question. Yeah.
Right, that's half a day.
Thank you, Chair. A slightly naive question, but I understand the procurement process for contracts in the main. From a framework contract perspective, with the view of what happened to Tomlinson's, and obviously Tomlinson's time with us was very short, I suspect it's a matter of months, wasn't it? So from a framework contract, do we, when we take them on board, because it's a framework contract, would we have the opportunity to look back at their finances? Because there would have been rumblings in the jungle earlier, when months ago, when we were looking to use them, and they did have a good reputation, didn't they? Yeah. I don't know that myself. But did we have any insight, because we'd sort of ran a financial report on them before we asked them to work with us?
Yeah, there was no particular insight at that point in time, but what we will do is some additional financial checks on new contractors procured, because all of the contractors are checked when they go onto the framework. We do believe we need to do some additional checks as contractors are being brought.
Pete,
as well.
Though, in the light of any contract situation, and we know since the pandemic, you know, not any contract, whether it's a framework or a total procurement process, would it not be safety belt and braces?
Yes.
With now, we've been burnt, our fingers have been burnt severely with Tomlinson's, haven't they? To rerun a financial report.
Yes.
on them, because we've lost, you know, our residents are in a worse situation than ever before. We discussed with Boyd, because we haven't really seemed to look at some financial analysis before we took Tomlinson's on, which is a great worry from a framework contract perspective.
Mm-hmm.
We should still do a credit check on them, shouldn't we, and look into their finances, because this would have been evident months before it's happened. Thank you.
Right, if I wasn't following the graphs very well, I need to have framework contract explained to me, please.
Yeah, okay. So, a framework organisation is an organisation which goes out to the market and conducts a procurement exercise which is fully compliant with legislation, and then it brings contractors onto the framework that have passed pre-qualification.
Okay.
Questions around and tests around financial integrity, their ability to do good work, they score them on quality and price, so you kind of run a full procurement process. You can then access that framework, and different frameworks have different rules, so you can arrange something called a mini competition, so you can kind of go to the framework and then say, I'd like to run a further kind of small exercise where I'll test quality and price in order to identify a contractor, and you can award a contract like that, or you can make a direct award to a contractor as well. You could say, you know, if the rules allow, you say, I'd like that contractor for this reason, please. So the framework procurement route takes out you don't have to run a long, you know, tender process with
okay.
kind of legal time scales built into them. So it's
because they've already.
So it's faster.
It's like a framework.
Yeah,
yes.
They've already been approved, basically.
Yeah.
And from a local government perspective.
But is there any guarantee or anything like that? Because they're there. I'm thinking, say you book a holiday and it belongs to ETA or whatever it is. Then you've got somebody to go back to. Now, these did fold in a remarkably short time.
Yeah, you have a contract which is you won't get that, won't be kind of backed up by the
it
framework.
Won't. Right, okay.
And in response to the question, yes, we'll do as many additional financial checks as we can reasonably on any contracts awarded to give us the greatest degree of assurance going forward.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. Councillor Rattray.
Thank you. I'm going to go back to my earlier question.
Yeah.
In the other item. No, it's about the how we've got to the 858. So I can see the breakdown, and Councillor Hamilton's reiterated that. So we've got the 700,000 for the contract side, and the remaining is for the sort of staffing side.
Yeah.
And I can understand from the staffing side how that would then become annual, because obviously we want to take them on and then we would keep them on. So I get how that would be required on an ongoing basis. But we're suggesting that the 858 is required on an ongoing basis to go into the budget. But my understanding would be that, or my understanding of the situation we're in currently, is we've got a backlog of voids. We want to inject some cash into that, yes, to get the backlog down, so that we're not dealing with such a huge backlog on an ongoing basis. So my question really is, the 700,000 from the contract side, is that required year on year now going forward? And for what reason, if we're looking to reduce down the voids?
Yeah.
You mean the 185?
The 185 I understand to a degree, because obviously we're taking staff on board, that's going to be an ongoing contract.
Got you.
It's the 700 from the contractor side.
Certainly. Through you, Chair. I think the expectation would be that it would actually be finite, it would be limited. So the expectation is likely we'll let the contract on a two-year term with opportunities for extension of 1 year plus 1 year, so 4 year max, but let it on a 2 year basis because it needs to be kind of attractive. Mm-hmm. But I think what I've envisaged is, you know, if you've cleared it, mm-hmm, you know, year, end of year two, or you know, and then at that point, then we could look to modify the budget.
And then just a follow on to that, if possible, what sort of timescale are we thinking to really make a dent in the voids that we've got currently, of the ones that are possible to repair and get relet?
Yeah, so it would be agreed that mobilisation would set some targets for the contractor. I think really we've put an expression of interest out, mm-hmm, on the framework already, so contractors know that we've got something coming down the line. We've had some interest in respect, so a number of contractors have said they'd be interested in it. So let's say that we look to award a contract, you know, come late September, then a period of mobilisation. And then we need to see how many they can do per week. So I think in around quarter four, we should start to see a reduction in terms of the number of voids in repair.
One final one. You mentioned something, Councillor Hamilton, that I've queried kind of to myself as I was going through the report, was the modelling side of it. So obviously we're spending out to get these properties repaired. But then once they're repaired, obviously, then we will gain an income from them. So there is a sort of a give and take within it. It would be useful to see that if we have that modelling.
I can kind of explain it now. So let's say that we spent £4,000 on a property and then relet it, and the rent is, let's call it £100 a week. It's 40 weeks to get the return. So in simple terms, that's how it would work.
No, I get that. I'm just... I understand the principle behind it. It would be useful to see our own modelling of how many properties we're expecting to get back in year one, how we're expecting to get back in year two, and over how many years it would take us to obviously pay back what we're putting out.
Okay, it would depend on the estimated void cost, so we'd need to have a look at.
I'm not suggesting you've got something today, but in future, I think that would be useful information to see.
We're putting together, Jeff, I mean, we're putting together the specification for the contractor at the moment. The draft landed with me today, and I need to look at that with colleagues. So the intention will be that we've got some KPIs in the contract, and that we put some volumes and look at the, you know, kind of the expectation, you know, set out some expectations in respect of how quickly contractors go through that. And you know, some incentives for quick completion as well. So I think when we've kind of bottomed that out, and that will take me, you know, a little bit of time, then I'd be happy to kind of share those parameters so we could kind of look at projecting that forward.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions?
One last question.
Harper Davis.
Thank you, Chair. And Pete, do we know how many contractors are out there at the moment in the market which we could count on as fairly reliable without doing scrutiny on them? I don't mean us personally, but government-wise. Well, the many.
Yes. I couldn't say how many there are at the moment or whether...
Do we have a good pick this time?
I can tell you we had a small number of contractors respond to the expression of interest for carrying out the work.
Are they well-known ones?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, it's not. I should say. Certainly some of them are, there are names that are known to us, but it's a relatively small contract package. 700, you know, 700 grand a year, and that's max. That's max as well. And not pushed it out, but it's a, you know, it was a maximum based on, you know,
and that was confidential, but it's just nice to know there
so
is
there's a small number back at the happy to share it afterwards, Gemma, or an exam session either way.
Thank you, Pete. Thank you, Chair. Well, thank you very much. Yes, thank you both of you for coming in today. Thank you.
And so, is the committee support the recommendations set out in the report of the Director of Housing and Wellbeing?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Thank you again for coming. Item 11, pre-decision scrutiny, Cabinet response. Confirm that there was no items for pre-decision scrutiny. Item 12, progress with panel work, which is page 33 on your agenda.
Thank you, Chair. So this is the scrutiny panel report. And there's one thing for noting, that we are running a scrutiny panel workshop on the 31st of August, which all members bar the Cabinet have been invited to. It's been run in this room as hybrid, so I'm hoping we'll get a mix of people in the room and some on the screen. And that workshop will look at an understanding of what Task and Finish Working is about and the various approaches. Topical issues for scrutiny, so the issues that Charnwood Borough Council is facing at the current time, and therefore may be good topics to look at. We'll also have some good examples to show you of scrutiny panels to give you a flavour of things that could be looked at. And the intention is that by the end of that scrutiny workshop, potentially there might be a list of maybe five or six topics that may come out. They then need to be brought to the next scrutiny commission to be approved as potential panels, and then the idea is once those have been approved, then the panels can be set up and the scoping documents would be approved at each of those scrutiny panels. So that's the intention of that workshop. And then the other thing with this report as well is budget scrutiny panel. So there's an action here where tonight you need to agree for the scrutiny panel to commence for the 23-24 financial year. And also if there are any nominations potentially for scrutiny, budget scrutiny chair as well. Thank you.
I would like to propose Mark Charles to be chair of the scrutiny committee. I think he's got the experience of being on that. And also, with him also being on the other panel, he's got some insight, past and future business of the council.
Okay, happy to support that, Chair, if the gentleman concerned would like to do it.
Twisted his arm.
So we don't
any other proposals?
I've not heard of any others. I asked. I sent an email round. I've not heard any more. So. Okay, so is everybody in agreement with that? Can I just see? There's lots of yes. Good.
Well, can you clarify? Is he going to be chair of?
We also have a budget scrutiny panel.
Oh, budget scrutiny.
Yeah, it's usually six meetings towards four meetings. Just seems like six. towards the end of the year and the beginning of the year, isn't it? It's working out the draft
budget. The next step is, so you've agreed now that Councillor Charles will be the chair of that panel, and then Democratic Services will subsequently send an email asking for expressions of interest to sit on that panel. It is not politically balanced, in our constitution we do try to keep, we say, six members on a panel. So if we get more than six, there will be a decision to be made in terms of the numbers, and that's done by Adrian Ward, who is delegated to look at the numbers. So it's always a difficult one. Hopefully we'll get the six. So
I think last time we made a recommendation that we keep as many old members on it as we can. Because
for experience.
Yes, experience. How's your explaining the Loughborough special rates and that over and over again. And yeah, poor old Simon.
And so the interest goes to the members that have been on the panel before the expression of interest is asked, and then we'll see where we go from that point onwards. So.
But of course there'll be a change because a lot of those that were on it are not councillors anymore anyway.
Exactly.
So. I've just written something down here and wish I could know why. List. Oh yes. List of previous panels. Yes. I know we were going to have that. Yeah. Have I missed it?
I did send it around.
Did everybody else get it? No, I can't remember saying it.
So if I have had a problem with my emails, I'm not just saying that. I have had a problem with my emails, but I did send that around.
I think I did see it. But I can't.
Shall we send it round again? Because I know I got it, but
it took me ages.
You'll have it there. So thank you very much, Peter.
Thank you.
I think what we'll do before this scrutiny workshop, we'll send around that list. So you've got the list of all the topics that have been covered in the past. We've also got like a scrutiny protocol.
Yeah, we did see that.
And there's other, and there's like flow charts of how you go through a process of how you get to the...
So we'll
send it out. Just before the meeting of this, well, the scrutiny workshop, so that it's all in fresh in everybody's mind of what's been looked at in the past. But yeah, Sally did send it.
I remember the flowchart.
Thinking this is very thorough.
I do apologise, Sally. It's just me. Right. So that was item. Forgotten where we are now. That was item 12, wasn't it?
Yes.
So now item 13, which is page 37.
Chair, this is the finance performance scrutiny work programme, and members, do you have any changes, suggestions to that work programme?
Nope.
Yes, Councillor Lennon. Note to this, because I don't know. What other work would be within their remit?
What other work would be within their remit? Nikki is the clerk for this, so this
is quite nicely handed. So, well done, Karen. So the role and responsibilities of the committee, you can find it in the constitution.
All right.
So basically, they look at performance management of the council with a specific heaviness on finance.
Right.
But they get a quarterly report of all key performance indicators, which covers all services of the council, plus some benchmarking data that they get that benchmark them against, you know, because we have what they would call indirect key performance indicators that we don't have any control over, and we can benchmark those, get some benchmark data around those to see how we're performing.
Okay.
But then we have the direct targets, which cover everything like waste. The reason I say waste is because it comes up every time. Housing, you know, what's happening in the markets, leisure centres. We've got a whole range of key performance indicators, and the committee would monitor those key performance indicators.
Right.
And then we get the two finance reports, capital plan and HRA revenue. And they get that on a quarterly basis as well.
Right.
So I do find it difficult to sort of work out where what sits. I mean, when you look at community safety partnership, and it's hard to think about the performance bit of that. Mm. You think it probably should sit in this scrutiny. But if there is a problem, as in with the voids, then it comes to the scrutiny. So if it's identified in the finance and performance as an issue, it will then come to this committee to be able to hone down a little bit more. And as I say, that's what happened with the voids. The voids sits with finance and performance.
Mm.
But because we considered it to be an issue, at the moment it's sitting here. But once the issue has been sorted out, it'll go back again.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I think through you, Chair, so the Finance and Performance Committee will look at a key performance indicator, and if the council is not performing and consistently over a period of time, which is what happened with the KPI 11A for voids,
then they push that up to scrutiny commission. So because you have more sort of power, as it were, to, you know, investigate and go into like maybe a scrutiny panel, you've got more sort of key options to be able to really dig deep down into that issue and potentially come up with some recommendations and actions.
And to be honest, the Voids might have been at one time a panel, but of course we'd had COVID, we'd had lots of reasons why the Voids had increased, that a panel wouldn't particularly specifically find the trouble, the issue with it, because there's so many issues, as we've just identified, isn't that so?
I think just worth saying as well, excuse me, for the newer members who don't, I guess whether you would cover this on initial training, but I think from a KPI perspective, there isn't many of the contracts, the big ticket items, along with the smaller ticket items, that we don't monitor in-house. Mm-hmm. You know, I think sometimes, as the new members might not know, you know, everything is monitored so scrutinised, isn't it, and regularly. So you have traffic light system, and then the officers will come look through the corporate plan. And I think it's just reassuring that all the major services we provide are monitored really, really critically. And I think that gives us reassurance. And I think Voids is an example. It's been affected by so many different reasons, hasn't it? But I think it's just reassuring to know, as a council, you know, we just do our best to make sure that we're delivering the services we need to on time.
I think just picking up on Lee's point to do with the report, if anyone hasn't seen those performance reports, it's really useful to dig one out, just to see how thorough it is. And the reports are really clear now. Yeah. It's like Lee says, it's traffic lighted. So it's very clear straight away, you'll get your kind of like green, amber, reds through every service area. So it is useful to look at.
Okay.
So just through you, Chair, something that I am in the process of arranging for the Finance and Performance Scrutiny Committee is a briefing on how the KPIs are managed. And would you like me to broaden the scope for that?
Yes.
That's a good idea.
I think just to send out previous
reports. And it's the same as our workshop. Anybody's welcome to our workshop and vice versa. I think that would be very valuable for us to know.
It's reassuring, isn't it?
Yeah. Right. Item four, you lovely people, is the Scrutiny Commission work programme and its hours, which is on page 42.
So thank you, Chair. So first of all, we've got an Appendix 1, which is the current programme, which is listed from page 43 onwards. So members, do you have any suggestions or changes on that? There was something we picked up earlier in the Chair's briefing, was the first item, which is always a standard item, is questions under Scrutiny Procedure 11.16. It is a standard item on the agenda, as you've probably seen for not just the Scrutiny Commission but other meetings as well. And we've kept this on to the work programme, but is there a sense that we maybe delete it off the work programme because
it's not necessary, is it?
But something that I would like to do is at the workshop, pretend we have a session just an explanation of what questions on notice is about, and actually how we promote it, because we can do more to promote that so that members are aware of the processes and what can be done. So it's a really good scrutiny tool. So would suggest delete that. Is there any other changes, suggestions?
No.
And then Appendix 2 sets out the list of key decisions and items to be considered in private session.
I
think you've got some suggestions of things to put on the work programme.
The Housing Capital Programme, and that's in March, as well as the Local Development Scheme and the Corporate Delivery Plan.
What page are you
on? I'm sorry, page 4,
51, thank you. So that's the Housing Capital Programme, Local Development Scheme, and the corporate Did you want, looking on page 49, there's the revenues and benefits service.
Oh, crikey, yes, yeah. We did identify that, yes, yes.
Can we add in the climate change strategy as well?
That one is going to finance
on finance, okay, so, that's nice.
Yeah. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4 items being added to the work programme.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else that you'd wish to see? Obviously, we're going to have this 6-monthly update on the voids as well, which is that's been added.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, I just thought we should note that the selective licensing scheme update that was deferred from this agenda, it is on the agenda, and I sent an email to say it was deferred. That was due to long-term staff sickness, so the report now won't be ready till October. And I spoke to the chair and the vice chair, and they were both happy for us to defer that to October, so that will also change on our work programme.
Oh, there we go then, that's fine.
Right, so was it going to be remarkably light tonight, but it's still managed an hour and a quarter, so... that's not too bad, is it? So the next meeting is the 11th of September, and I will close this meeting. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Can I have that voice feedback that I handed out?
Oh, that's really good.